Everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Women Over 50, A Life Redesigned. My name is Shelly, and I am your host for this podcast. Hey, before we get started on this week's episode, I want to remind you that we have a Facebook group, Women Over 50, A Life Redesigned. I will put that in the show notes down below. And also want to remind you that you can become a member of the Podcast Elite Circle and get lots of goodies and behind the scenes information, funny outtakes, stuff like that. The link is down below as well. Super honored to have Keel Bergen as my guest today. She's the author of Wholly Unraveled, Wholly, and founder of Bee Tribes. She's an entrepreneur, an activist, an international best-selling author, and filmmaker. She has a profound story of survival from the extreme isolation of her childhood and growing up in a Catholic cult. It's a story of self-discovery as well, and has inspired a life dedicated to making a profound impact on people across the globe. She believes when a person finds their voice and shares their story, they can change the world around them. I want to give my listeners a little bit of a warning. Some of this stuff may be tough to hear. It does have some issues of trauma, so please be forewarned. Now, on to my episode with Keel.
I have been traveling the globe. I do microfinance lending for women in third world countries. And I've always loved working with women and helping them to tell their story. And I hadn't told mine yet. And so it started to feel like it was a must do for me, because here I am talking to women about the atrocities of their life. All kinds of different things. And I felt like an imposter to not tell my own story. And the way, I appreciate what you said about the way I wrote it, because the reason it was a very specific way for me to write that, because I didn't want to save the reader. I wanted them to come with me. And I think I realized later, I wanted them to come with me because I was really lonely. Writing hard sections, and I would say, this is going to help someone else. So I'm just hoping that all the trauma I walk through, I can help someone else heal from that too. So it's really, that's really what it's about for me, is for women to tell their stories so that we can heal collectively, because, you know, we are our stories in a lot of ways. And I want my story to be healing to other people.
I agree. And I always tell people, especially women, because I have this large following of women over 50. When you share your story, other people then feel brave to share your story. Because I thought my story was traumatic until I read your story. And I was like, you know, if Keel can do it, I can do it, you know. But not only did you write your story, you published your story. So I am really curious as to the response that you received from your family. What was the response from your family with your story?
Yeah. Well, first I want to say, I'm sorry that you had to go through trauma too. And I hope you've been able to make it more of a healing place. If we can just try to make our traumas into something beautiful, then it's not for naught, right?
Well, exactly. And I will tell you that, reading stories helps, because then when I was growing up, I know we're going to get off topic of the question here, but when I was growing up, my father was an abusive alcoholic. I thought I was the only teenage girl in the world that had an abusive alcoholic father, because we just didn't, you know, you just didn't go to school one day and be like, oh, by the way, my father's an alcoholic. You know, he likes to do things. It's just not something you do. So you kind of grow up and you become stuck in that. Well, I can't tell anybody my story. But then I read other people's stories now, like, oh my gosh, that trauma was what an experience they had. So you don't feel quite as alone. So I like the way that you, yeah. Well,
that's a great way to say it. You don't feel as alone. And that's what happened to me, is that the surrounding of people that came together around the book and people who are reading it, writing to me, and thousands saying, thank you so much, because now I can tell my story. That's makes all of it worthwhile. The pain, the trauma, the forgiveness piece, all of that, it makes it worthwhile.
Yeah.
So, and I'd love to say, I hear a lot, I had trauma, but I didn't go through what you went through. You know, people say that to me a lot. And the truth is, trauma is trauma.
Exactly.
You probably feel the same level of trauma that I did. Maybe your worst is my worst.
Yeah.
You know, I hear other women's stories, and I say, oh, I can't believe you had to go through that. Mine's not as bad. Right. But there's no comparison. We're not like rungs on a ladder that we're trying to like have more trauma or less trauma, or it's more about the camaraderie that bringing together gives us. And it says, that happened to you, that happened to me.
Yeah.
And many people haven't had the same experience I had, but they had the same feeling that I had going through, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah, trauma is trauma.
It opens conversation.
Yeah, no, you know, some people will say, you know, well, other people had it worse, but that doesn't negate your experience. Like if you say that, like we often say that, well, you know, it could be worse, or someone had it worse. Well, yeah, they did, but it doesn't negate my experience.
Right.
But as someone who has considered myself writing my own story, how did you deal with the family members of, I'm just super curious about when your story was published, how did that go over? How did you handle that and all that?
Yeah. So, if you read the book, I'm one of seven kids and, my mom and dad, obviously, and I was only in contact with one brother who's actually not in the book. He's 12 years younger. And we're close. We're really close. He and his wife and three kids, and I just love them. The book brought us closer. Because I think it's because, well, I know what it's because he called me one day and he had his glasses on. He's a Mason. So he's like, you know, guy. But he said, I listened to the book, and he had told me he wasn't going to read it. And I said, that's fine. I don't care if you read it or not. It's my story. But he called with his sunglasses on and emotional and said, I feel like you answered all the questions that I had inside that I wasn't allowed to ask. And so that brought us a lot closer. I had not been in contact with any of the other siblings or my parents for years before that. In order for me to heal to the level that I wanted to heal, I couldn't go in and out of that family unit.
They
also, you know, one of my sisters disowned me when I got a divorce 21 years ago. She's, so we hadn't been close since then, which is a real shame. Cause so it's a sadness of mine, but it's also, I really couldn't be the woman I am if I was still tied into that kind of that dynamic, cause it wasn't healthy for me. And then I have one other brother that since the book came out, we started talking. So that's been beautiful too.
Well, you know, one of the reasons I ask that is because for those of us who, you know, what it's our story, and I think we have every right to put it out there in a way that we need to, and not necessarily worry about the other. I mean, we need, you know, we have to be sensitive to other people, but ultimately this is our story that needs to be told. And I think there's a real healing in doing that, because I'm also my parents are both dead. My mom died a long time ago, and my dad passed away in 2008. And I don't have contact with my two brothers because they're bullies. They're bullies basically. And so to, you know, insert myself into that dynamic again, I just have no desire to do that. But I think telling your story is very important. So again, I applaud you, because I know you have a lot of siblings. There's a lot of people in your family, but you just said, I'm going to do this. I have to tell my story. And I just really, really applaud you for that. But one of the things I did notice about the story is you still had some like funny moments in there, that, you know, a little bit of humor in this story. Why do you think that was so important in this like heavy subject that you were writing about, that?
Oh, that's a great, I guess because life is messy, right? Like life isn't all good, all bad. People aren't all good. People aren't all bad. So
yeah.
I think it's just about, I wanted it to be true. I had funny moments. I had hilarious things happen to me in my life. I mean, and I've done dangerous things and I've done, you know, so I just wanted everything to be in there because that was my life.
I think that's a great point because I wrote an essay about my dad after he died. My dad was a real cranky bastard when he died. But I got a stray hair. But then I remember all the things we used to do. Like my dad taught us to walk on our hands, and he would tell us dirty jokes, and he'd let us watch Hee Haw, and Mom would be yelling from the kitchen, "They can't watch Hee Haw," you know. So just things like that that people don't realize that even though, you know, there's a lot of trauma in your family, there are these moments that seemingly normal. But I have this Facebook group of about 6,500 women, and I know a lot of them have faced trauma, like have lived through trauma, you know, and going through it and being the age that you are, what would you say to these women? How can we start healing from this trauma that maybe we sort of like, oh, I don't really want to recognize this, or I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to bring it back up again.
Yeah. I think the number one thing is to own your story and to own it in a way that, you know, there is real wisdom in our trauma. There's real wisdom, there's courage, there's bravery. And when we start to realize that from telling our story perspective, then we get to open up this whole broad part of ourselves that says, I am worthy. When we tell our story, there's a worthiness factor there. All of that guilt and shame and fear I had about telling my story was completely, and I mean completely, released when the book came out. But I also want to say to the women who have had trauma that there's a time and a place to share. It's not grab the mic and scream it from the rooftops if you're not ready for that. You need to have a support system in place if you want to tell your story. It's why I started Bee Tribes, my business that I love and adore. It's my heart work. It's because when women come together collectively, you know, we do tribes of women, like 15-ish at a time. And we walk through a lot of that together. And one of the major tenets of that is that it is a safe space, and no one will ever tell anyone outside of that circle what happened. And your trauma may be, I don't know how to, one woman's was, I don't know how to be in my life.
I hear that all the time. Yeah.
Right? Yeah. And so it's everything from that to some of the things that happened to me. And, you know, so it's like, that's why I named it B in parentheses, because I want you to be wherever you are. Be happy, be productive, be sad, be sensual, be powerful. But whatever you are, own it in that moment and be it. And it makes me so excited that women are starting to do that. And collectively, one of our other tenets is we are all the teacher and we're all the student. And it's a really important tenet because your wisdom from your upbringing, from your work environment, whatever it is really important to bring to a circle of women. And mine is really important to bring to a circle of women. So if you put 15 women together, I'll bet you we have got the bases covered in pretty much anything you need, right? And we need to move in that direction of where we always support each other, no matter what, without judgment, but with gentle accountability. And so that's what we do. That's what we do at Bee, and Bee sprung from the book. I don't think I would have done it had I not put my story into the world.
I love that. That just made me sit up a little straighter when you were talking about just be in the moment. I loved that. And we'll get to your Bee Tribes here in a moment. So how difficult was it for you? You know, a lot of people are like, well, family's family. You know, family's, what is that saying? Blood's thicker than water, or whatever. Did you have any guilt of like, I know there's a sadness about not having relationships with our siblings that we grew up with. I mean, do you feel any guilt? And if you do, how do you handle the breaking away from the siblings? for whatever reason.
I appreciate that question. I think it's important to go inside. I don't have anyone's answers but my own.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew for me, was there guilt? I think for a little while, blood should be thicker than water, that whole thing. But yeah, you know, my life is more important. I had to make a decision that my world and my children's world was not intertwined with theirs, because I didn't believe in the way, I don't subscribe to the way they subscribe to live their life. And so in order for me to be healthy in that, and to also break the ancestral energy that comes with that, whether you believe, whatever you believe that is, right? I'm not here to preach religion or spirituality, but I have my own spirituality and my own spiritual practice. And I believe that that karma that came with them has now been stopped. And my boys did not have to take that on. And I believe it so strongly. And I think if I had stayed in the family, I wouldn't have been able to heal that piece and give them the gift that they will never know that trauma. They will never know that level, that same pain. And so I really was focused on that piece of it. And so that kind of took away the guilt. But I would say in the beginning, I just felt this, I'm supposed to be somewhere in a family, aren't I? But then I started to make my own chosen family, and that plus knowing I didn't give that I'm giving my children such a gift of a clean slate with the ancestral side.
Yeah.
That really eliminated a lot of the guilt.
Yeah. I love that, because I think that, you know, I hear from women a lot that, he's my brother, or she's my sister. And, you know, I just, even though they're toxic or whatever, I just can't, I just have to, because that's what I'm supposed to do. So for those listening to this conversation who have those feelings, I hope that you take to heart what Keel said, because I've done the same thing. And there was a lot of guilt. It's like, well, you know, we used to have a good time when we were kids. And I kind of miss my, you know, this whole, you know, siblings and stuff. But in the end, you ultimately have to do what's right for you. And one of the things
I would ask, what happened?
Go ahead.
I would ask them a question too of what is supposed to mean, and write about that. So you're supposed to now answer the question, why? Why am I supposed to do that? Am I supposed to because they're expecting it? Yeah. Am I supposed to because there's shoulda, coulda, wouldas in there? But let's let go of those shoulds and supposed tos, and let's say, what am I supposed to be? What is the action I am supposed to take? And the other thing that I ask women is, how old are you internally when you're with your family? Right?
Oh,
if you're acting.
What a great question. Because
I was always like 12 or 15 or something. And I never quite grew up in the family. And so I would feel that way. And so if you are acting a certain age in your family of origin, you're thinking maybe I shouldn't be there. Listen, take a break for a little while. See, like, explore what's happening inside.
That is such a great point. And I had never thought about that, because after my mom died when I was 32, and I remember writing about how my dad would call and want me to come visit. And I would, like, you know, ignore the messages or whatever. And then he just quit calling. But one of the things I noticed when I went down there and I wrote about this is that I would be 15. Like, there was that, I was 15 in that role. Like, he treated me like I was 15 and I acted like I was 15. And I didn't really think about that until you just said that. That is so true. You know? That's fascinating.
I remember I asked my dad, you know, everyone has their own process. When I was writing the book, I needed to see my dad just for me. And I came through a lot of trauma therapy. And what I needed to say was, and it's even weird when I say it out loud now, the only thing I needed to say was, I know what you did to me. That's what I needed. And so I took him to lunch and I said it. And what are you talking about? You know, what are you talking about? And and it was, well, you threatened to kill me when I was 12. And he said, you know, with a gun at my head. Uh-huh. And he said, "Oh, come on, you knew I wouldn't do that." And I looked him square in the eye, like I always promised myself I would when I was young. And I said, "No 12-year-old girl thinks you're not going to do it when you say you're going to do it. You were my father. You're my father."
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And he was like, "Eh." I mean, there was just, and it was so interesting because the healing that happened saying that to him sitting across from the table was profound, because I figured out what I needed to say, the example I needed to give. And his response was so unempathetic and no compassion or empathy, just more, "Oh, you're a pain," you know, just, oh, it was just.
So how scary was that for you? How scary was that for you to ask your dad that question? I'm getting scared just listening to you.
I know, I was shaking. I wouldn't meet him at my house, you know, but then I realized he so doesn't have any power anymore. He has no power over me, none. And quite frankly, I feel because I've done so much work on the forgiveness piece with him, alone, but about him and my mom, it was amazing. It was amazing. I walked out of there different than I walked in.
Yeah.
And that was the last question.
I didn't have the opportunity to do that with my dad because the last time I saw him, I was taking care of him, which is a whole other dysfunctional story. Mm-hmm. He was dying of cancer, but he was cranky till the day he died. It was like, he just, you know, it was the same thing. It was like, you know, I'm a cranky old man. I'm going to stay that way.
Was he grateful that you were taking care of him?
I don't think so. He never, if he was, he never said. So.
Are you glad you did it?
Yeah, I am. Because, you know, I feel my, how can I say this? I realized that my parents both suffered great trauma when they were younger. And then that carries, they were ill-suited to be parents. And of course, you carry the trauma, your trauma onto your kids and, you know, so forth and so forth. I believe almost every human deserves empathy and sympathy. Now, that being said, I had my sister there and stuff, and he was in a position that he could not harm us physically. You know, like he was just like literally incapacitated because he was dying of cancer. But yeah, I am glad I did that. I am glad I did that. And I did it mostly for my sister because she was down there by herself dealing with him. And she cried one day. She's like, "I just can't do this anymore. I cannot do this anymore." Because it is, you know, for those listening, anyone that's a caretaker for someone who is severely sick like that, it's draining mentally, physically. It's just exhausting. So I told myself, "Well, I'm going to go down there for my sister." And I did, to help her out. But then in a weird way, Keel, it was really healing for me too. I can't explain why. I don't know why. There was never any resolution with my dad about anything that he did or any deep conversations on his deathbed. But it was healing for me in a way. So yeah. I can't really explain why, but I might have to think about that. That's a great question. I'm going to put some thought into that. But I don't advise that for everybody because I felt I was in my healing journey from the trauma into it far enough that I could do this. I don't recommend that for everybody, of course, you know, we're all on our own journey. So, but yeah, so it was interesting, but.
I'm happy for you that you had that.
Thank you. One of the things too, I find really interesting about your story is that I believe you guys were Catholic, right? Were you Catholic?
Correct.
Yeah. And it was just a weird, like, the meetings you would go to and things that you guys, you know, were told to do or did because of the religion, to me just seemed traumatic in itself and dysfunctional. And then you left that and then you came full circle. And that was one of your, so the thing that you left that, you know, necessarily wasn't all that great was the thing that you also found healing in. So I found that really interesting that you sort of came full circle. Could you I do, tell us a little bit about that?
Sure, I do too. I think it's fascinating and ironic, right? But there are some really stark differences. And so the way I was raised, my dad was the leader, one of the leaders in this Catholic group. It was kind of very cultish. And if you were in the group, you were in the group. If you were not, I wasn't allowed to talk to you. It was prairie skirts, and my mom wasn't allowed to highlight her hair or wear lipstick, you know, that kind of thing. Arranged marriages. And then I end up at a Catholic kind of, a place where they take promises of poverty, chastity, obedience, called Madonna House in Canada, where we work the land. I sheared sheep, milked cows, killed chickens, cleaned other people's handkerchiefs, you know, all of that kind of stuff. And, the difference was there was so much love at Madonna House. You were just enveloped in love. And yes, it was Catholic, and I had to go to church twice a day, and everything was in silence. You're supposed to pray all day. But they loved me, and they didn't judge me, and they didn't say, you should do this, you should do that. It was just, I could weep into my bowl of beans and rice, and I knew that I was okay. I knew that they loved me. I knew that they were taking care of me. And so that's really different than my dad, my upbringing, because my dad was so domineering. And you're not doing that, and you're not doing that, and you're going to marry him, and you're going to do this. And so it's really, really different.
Oh, well, that I'm glad to hear that, because I know a lot of people leave, whether it's church or something, and never ever go back and never find, you know, that healing. But that was obviously very important to you.
And I didn't stay Catholic. You know, I have a very rich spiritual practice, but it's not inside of a religion. But I think religion for some people really works. It's, you know, it's amazing. I don't like rules.
No, I totally get that. Well, when I started reading the book and was reading about when you guys went to church before I knew about being Catholic, I thought, boy, that sounds like a fundamentalist Pentecostal church, you know?
Yeah, doesn't it?
It does, exactly. And then I was like, what? That's a Catholic church, you know? So that was
we were speaking in tongues and slain in the spirit and
it was my mom was adopted by a Pentecostal preacher and his wife when she was young, and they would come and do revivals. That's sort of what your situation reminded me of when I was 6 years old, going to revivals and stuff.
You know, what's funny, I was at a gathering this weekend. So I'm at my my boyfriend's house in Spring Lake, which is funny because that's where I grew up. And then we had a 30-year hiatus, and we're back together, which is really yummy and fantastic. and he's actually in the book, which is really funny. Someone just over the week, just this week, said, oh my gosh, I went to your house one time and you guys were jumping up and down, you know, your dad was jumping up and down and like speaking in tongues. And it was just so interesting that people still remember that my dad was like that, you know, and I sometimes had to speak in tongues to be released from the dinner table. You know, it was really an interesting way to grow up.
definitely. I'm going to really encourage my listeners to get this book, even if you can't relate to anything that we've told in terms of trauma or anything like that. But it's just a well-written book. The storytelling in it is fantastic. I felt like, it's hard to explain, but I just was engrossed in your story. It's just one of those like, oh, this is awful, but what happens next, you know, kind of thing. And then you get in your 20s, you're working at the bar, and you're like, oh, keel, you know. So it's just
not acting like that keel.
I know. it's just a really great book. But for my YouTube viewers, you definitely need to grab it. And I'll put all the information down below. But I got a couple of more things for you before we head off. But
if someone can't afford to buy the book, but they think they would love to have it. I'm happy to send them.
That's great.
I don't want anyone ever turned away for money.
That's
so
great.
We'll figure it out.
Yeah, I love that. Mm-hmm. That is great. I know that one of the reasons you wrote the book was because it's part of your healing journey, you know. But what do you want women to get from this book? The readers, I should say, not necessarily women, but my audience is mostly women. So what do you want
to
get?
The book is 80-20 to women too.
Yeah.
I want women to own their story. I want women to see hope. This is a really hopeful book. I mean, I know it's a lot of trauma and all of that, but there's so much hope in our life. And that's what I want women to feel. I want them to gather. I want them to tell their story. And I want them to hear that they are so, so worthy. They're so worthy. And to let that from the inside out, live that from the in, like, let that ignite your insides. Is that your story can be turned into your power. It's your superpower.
Oh, yeah.
And it will help others. It'll really help others if you tell your story.
Yeah. And I preach it, sister. I've been saying that for a long time. Yeah. So, and I love that because one of the questions I always ask them is, what's your superpower? So telling your story is one of our great superpowers. And you know, the thing is, you don't have to get your story published. You can just write your story down. You know, it's not like, I have to write my story and get a book out of it. No, you know, you do what works for you. You have Bee Tribes. I would love for you to tell our listeners Bee Tribes. What's that about and how we can get information on that?
Yes, I'm so excited to say that we can launch more Bee Tribes now because we were on hiatus with the COVID. So Bee Tribes is an organization that I founded because I believe in everything we're speaking about here, the stories. And it's great for business. It's great for nonprofits. It's great for any woman going through life. And so we kick it off in Mexico, which is fantastic. We're starting in September with new tribes. So I would love any of your listeners who, if this sparks an interest in them, it's a very powerful 6-month curriculum where we come together and we transform together. And your transformation is going to look really different than someone else's transformation. But it's the common denominator and kind of our special sauce is that we do a lot of work in the different categories. And it goes across boundaries of work, personal trauma, healing, forgiveness, amendments, you know, like making amends to people. It's all across those things. And then at the end, so we have 4 days in Mexico. So we kick it off with tribes of women, about 15 to a tribe. And we go 4 days in Mexico. And the 4 days in Mexico they're stunning. I leave so full. And these women form such a bond. They don't know each other going in.
Yeah.
And I think with our, you know, we have a really unique curriculum that I walk people through. And so we have a whole house to ourselves that has like 20 bedrooms because I want it to be insular. I want there to be real safe space for everyone to share and be who they want to be in that. So it's kind of, we spoil you rotten for 4 days, but we're also cracking your heart open. And so it's a beautiful entrance into this 6-month program. Then we meet on Zoom calls every other week for an hour and a half. And that's when we go through the curriculum and we go through all kinds of different places that you can identify patterns in your life that don't serve you, all kinds of different things, forgiveness and amends and agreements with yourself. And a thing I call core reflections that we kind of work out where you want to be in your life. A lot of women our age say, I don't know, like I'm 50 now. What happened?
I know. I hear it every day.
Yep. So we answer those questions. We work really hard to answer those questions together and have that profound transformation. And I think another part of our special sauce is that in the off weeks, you work with a partner. And so whatever our topic is for those 2 weeks, you get really close to someone working with them. And we do what we call musings and quests. So musings are things that we give you that you can write about, think about, And then quests are things that you can actually do to be productive in making the change.
Okay.
And, yeah. And then the at the end, we have a 3-day up in the Rocky Mountains. You'd love it. We do a 3-day retreat to celebrate the growth that we went through together. So that's it in a nutshell. And it's we're launching tribes now for September 3rd, the end of September is when the kickoff is. And then we're also launching tribes in January. So okay. Now's the time if anybody's excited about it. Yeah. We are thrilled to be doing them again.
Yeah. Oh, it sounds like a good time on top of a lot of learning experiences. So I'll just put it that way.
You should come with us.
Well, I can't in September, but boy, January sure sounds good. So yeah, absolutely. I love what you were saying. And we'll get all the information and we'll put that down in the show notes below.
Great. And they can just find me. They can find everything at keelbergen.com.
Yeah.
So.
So, and we'll put the link to the book and all that down there. So we're going to wrap up. I actually have another podcast at one. I need to get an interview. I need to get ready for. But what's one last thing you'd like to say to our listeners before we end our conversation?
I love to hear from women. Anything, you know, everyone's story is worthy. And so if anyone wants to reach out, there's a place to do it on my website to just say hello and tell me who you are. Tell me part of your story. Cause I wrote my story so that I could hear your story.
Yeah.
And so if anyone wants to reach out to say hi, I would love that. I love to hear from women, my readers, women who, if any of this strikes a chord, tell me. That's cool. What I'd like to say. Yeah.
Absolutely. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. What a great story, inspiring. And I'm so glad after I, you know, knew what you've gone through as a child and young adult to see that you're just beautiful. You're happy. You're in a good place. So that makes my heart happy, especially since I know where you started. So a little inside information on that. So
that gives the people hope, right?
Oh, exactly. Yeah. So, okay. Well, thank you so much. Really, really appreciate it.
Thank you. That was lovely to talk to you. I love your conversational feel.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.